Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome to the new year. That sounds great. I love the way that sounds. New opportunities, new horizons, new golf trips, travel, all kinds of good things coming. We hope, we know for Darren and I, and we hope for you too. And welcome to the third episode in our special three-part series, reminiscing about some of our favorite experiences, we can say this now, of last year.
That's right.
So long ago. In 2018. Thanks for finding us out in Cyberland on iTunes, Audio Boom. As always, on the Golf News Net platform at golfnewsnet.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence, still in Myrtle Beach in 2019. He's Darren Bunch, still out in California. You can find him at Getaways Golf on Twitter and at Golf Getaways on Instagram. Me, you can find at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E. And if you don't know that by 2019, shame on you. You can find me everywhere. I am now omnipresent on social media. Darren, we have talked about food ad nauseum, literally and figuratively. In episode 124, we did that, all about the favorite places we've stayed in episode 125. So tell us, insert music here, what's this final episode all about?
Well, we talked so much about food in episode 124 that I'm still full. I feel like I need to be working out every day after recounting that epic collection.
Was that not one of your New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Okay. It should be.
We talked about so many great places to stay. Now we're going to talk about not just our favorite courses we played in 2018, but we're going to dial it down. We're going to drill down, as the kids say, to the ones we experienced for the very first time. So there were a lot of places we went back to that we had been before. We're going to hit those at other times in the podcast. But for this one, we're going to talk about the ones that we experienced for the first time. There are some very good ones. A few are true hidden gems. Others are names you've probably heard of before, but they're all exceptional, fun, and creative, which is what we're looking for when we talk about our own love of golf.
That's true. Totally true. First, before we do, it's 2019, but let's keep it going. A quick mention about our sponsor, the great 2under.com, the number 2undr.com. They're amazing. Joey Pouch is still around and better than ever in 2019. Performance underwear, ridiculously comfortable loungewear. I can now attest, as I have a full wardrobe. You know what's happening, Darren, with 2under?
You're becoming a 2under?
I am not just becoming a 2-under. I am little by little, and at a rapidly increasing pace, I am getting rid of pretty much everything else in this world of underwear, loungewear that I own. I'm serious. I'm getting rid of it because this stuff is beyond great. It really
is. You have so many Joey pouches, you're becoming a Joey pouch.
Let's just say I'm enough. I got enough Joey pouches. Know what I'm saying? I can get rid of everything I ever had and still be good.
If you would like your own Joey pouch, you can still use the promo code GNN20 to get 20% off your next purchase of 2under apparel at 2under.com. That is the number 2undr.com, just like Mitch and I use when we're making our own purchases from 2under.com.
Which we do.
All the time.
This is big. A lot of people, Jack Curry, who's the national VP of sales at 2under and a great friend. When we started, we got a couple of complimentary pairs and they were great. And it led us to really understand what it was about. But since then, we've pretty much been on our own buying, Jack. And we're fine with that. I am absolutely happy if you know, a lot of the times people think that just because you mention it and they may be sponsors in a certain way, that you're just getting tons of free stuff. And that's not the case. I think it says more about it that you and I have actually really gone out, spent some money because that's how great the product is.
Yeah, except that Jack did bring you a big care package over the holidays, and I'm still waiting for mine to arrive in the mail, apparently.
Good luck. How far is 2022? It's only 3 years from now. All right,
let's get 11 more months to Christmas now, Mitch.
Oh, good. Good. All right, well, I'll talk to Jack about that.
Get on that.
Here, wait, let me laugh one of those laughs. All right, let's get rolling on our places that we've played, new places that we have played. I have a few, you have a lot, actually two-thirds, one-third. No, I guess it would be one-third, two-thirds. If it's me, then you.
This, by the way, is another one of these lists, these nine. You know, we were going to do the nine best things we'd ever eaten this year. I mean, last year now, in 2018. The nine best places we stayed in 2018. And this was going to be the nine courses that we had played for the first time in 2018. We have not kept it to nine on any of the three episodes.
Yeah, it's so, like our emergency nine, which now is 13
it's like an emergency
questions.
12, yeah. 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently our math skills is why we're doing podcasting.
All right. That's fine. And it's fine with me. Because why limit yourself and why play by the rules?
But speaking of nines,
yes,
you are going to talk about the Winter Park Nine, which is an actual nine.
Yes, absolutely true. And I have to say, this was a great start to my 2018. I went down to the PGA Merchandise Show, which is at the end of January every year. I think it's got to be approaching my 25th year for the PGA Show. I've been going down a long time. But this year was really different because our good friend Akbar Chisti from Seamus Golf had invited me to join them the Tuesday of PGA Show Week, to join them at Winter Park. And they had a little outing there, and I had not played Winter Park. I knew about it. I'd heard about it. I'd seen pictures. And I have to tell you that to start off PGA Show Week with Winter Park and the nine-hole golf course that Keith Rebb and Riley Johns have put together there was, I couldn't ask for a better way to start, not just that week, but the whole year. Because, and Darren, we've talked about that. We talked about it on the podcast earlier. What they did at Winter Park, to me, is a template that I wish every metropolitan and municipal area in the country were looking at. There's so many things to talk about. I won't get into all of them here. We've talked about it on the podcast before, but the course has an unbelievable history. I mean, 100-year-old history. And it's gone through a lot of changes over the year. It's right in the middle of beautiful Winter Park outside of Orlando, a fantastic community. And the thing that once I started driving and I drove through Winter Park to get there, I realized my first connection to the Winter Park Nine was that it reminded me of Scotland and the way the courses in Scotland, like the old course in St. Andrews, are part of the community. And you drive up and you get out. The clubhouse is not big, but you walk in. They've got the whole history of the golf course, which has gone through a lot of incarnations. Up on the walls, there's pictures. You realize you're in a place that's been around for a long time. But then when you drill down, what happened was they had this golf course that really wasn't doing well. And they had some ideas about how to keep it alive, which I won't get into here because those stories are pretty long. What they ultimately settled on was Keith Rebb and Riley Johns, two of our great younger, they're not young, but younger architects. And they presented a vision of what the Winter Park Nine would be at an incredible budget of $1.2 million, which was much lower than other people had been bringing in, and with a timeline. They started in March. They finished way under budget and way under time. And what they did is they made this nine-hole golf course the kind of place that everybody can play. If you're a great player, you'll love playing it because the challenge of the nine holes is off the charts, owing to the green complexes. These are not your nine-hole little cute little par three, four, five course little holes. The holes may be short, and it might be the shortest course, the shortest nine-hole course you'll play, but the green complexes are world-class. The bunkering, the greens themselves, I was stunned as I played it. With every hole, you fall more in love. The other end of the spectrum is beginners can go out and play it. I think we played in an hour and 20 minutes. Ryan Ballingy and I got to experience it together. It is a fantastic the kind of place that you just want to keep going back to. I wish that there was either a place in Myrtle Beach or that I could get to Winter Park and the Winter Park Nine every week. I would spend so much time there, Darren. I can't even begin to tell you.
Well, there are so many of these places that are coming on the scene. You know, back in episode, I think it was 95, when we talked about Winter Park originally, we also talked about Goat Hill Park, which is not going to be on this podcast today. But what is going to be on this podcast a little bit later, we're going to talk about Sweetens Cove in a minute. We're going to talk about Rockwind Community Links. So much of this list of places that we went to play in 2018 that kind of really struck us are these courses that are thinking about being community golf in a completely different way, and each of them in a different way from each other as well. You know, they each have their own unique twist. And so that's just what is kind of, I think, starting to drive golf. And there are guys out there who are specifically looking to kind of advance that mentality, because, you know, that's how we're all going to keep playing golf. The big places are great, the destinations, but most people are playing golf close to the house, you know, most of their golf. And so you want to build these kinds of places. There's a course here, you know, we have well-documented Sundale Country Club here in Bakersfield for kicking my dog off the golf course. That golf course was going through some financial issues, and I thought, boy, if it were me, I would buy it and do exactly what they did at Winter Park Nine, build something that is fun and walkable. I was talking with somebody the other day about a course that looks like it's up for sale in the North Carolina Pinehurst area. And one of the ideas rolled out was just making it a walking only course with an annual membership that is incredibly affordable. And, you know, just these creative ideas are really, like I said, what is driving, I think, a whole nother level of golf that kind of got ignored for years and years and years. We thought about public golf as kind of being just blah, flat, you know, you go out and play it, and then you go play the spectacular things on vacation. That's not the case anymore. There's a lot of interesting golf out there, and we need to be building more of it.
Yeah, and one of the things about Winter Park that I love, because it's right in the middle of Winter Park, I mean, there's train track that goes by it. There's a cemetery that borders one of the holes. It's a fantastic thing. Is the kids. We keep talking mm-hmm. about growing the game. How do we do it? How do we get them into golf? How do we? Well, Winter Park, you can play barefoot. You can play listening to music. You can play. I mean, their attitude is totally open. And there were so many kids out there. Not only that, when Keith Reb and Riley Johns, think about this. I said that they finished under budget and under time. The under budget part, they didn't keep that money. They put it back. They made the decision to put it back into the Winter Park experience. They built a 10,000 square foot putting course that is adjacent to the golf course, where anybody in the town can just walk over and spend time putting on this putting course. And I thought, man, if you want to get kids into the game, this is the way to do it, period.
Yep.
Period. Yeah. There's no other way to do it. This is the greatest thing. I really loved seeing it. All right, let's
More kids and more dogs. That's what we need.
That's it. And they can. They're all golf. Around there. They're all around there.
Yep.
Woo, woo. all right. Let us move to another course that both of us loved, and that is the short course at Mountain Shadows, the 18 holes designed by Forrest Richardson.
And we have talked a lot about Mountain Shadows over these three episodes. The food is unbelievable at that resort. The resort experience itself is unbelievable. They've both been mentioned frequently. So just quickly, though, you know, 18 holes from Forrest Richardson, ton of variety, all different types of shots. You got an island green. You've got a Baritz green, kind of a Baritz-style green, I guess it would be. You have a giant two-tiered green. You have greens in bowls. You can play off slopes. You pretty much use all your irons. And then you've got the 17-and-a-half hole, which is, you know, the kind of an extra putting green that you can play games on and whatnot. You know, episode 111, we talked all about Mountain Shadows and its experience. We're hoping to have Forrest Richardson on the podcast very soon. And so check out Mountain Shadows. Again, if you're going to Scottsdale, Phoenix, Paradise Valley, you're going to go down there and make a trip. Mountain Shadows is, it's not the budget value lodging experience, but it is definitely worth it. If you're going to splurge on a vacation, I'd go stay there in a heartbeat.
And I'll throw one quick thing in that I love. They said, you know, people think because it's called the short course, and they think of it like other par three courses that they might have experienced, and, well, maybe it's not worth it. Mountain Shadow Short Course is a place where tour pros go. They have a weekly money game at this place. And they have all kinds of touring pros that come around getting ready for tournaments. That's how good these green complexes are. Because this place will test your short game like very few courses. Forget short course, very few courses. All right, let's move on. We've talked about Winter Park. We talked about Mountain Shadows, a course that I have yet to visit but will be on my list. I'm going to get to Sweetens Cove this year. I promise you, Darren. I will get there.
You definitely need to. I mean, you mentioned the guys behind Winter Park 9 as being not young golf architects, but younger, kind of this new wave of guys who are thinking about the game a little differently. King Collins' design certainly is in that same vein. And Sweetens Cove, you know, it's in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. If you're driving down from Nashville, it's before you get to Chattanooga. It has got a ton of publicity. A lot of that probably because Zach Blair holds an event there, our friend Zach Blair, the tour player. But it lives up to the hype. I didn't know if it would. I showed up there. I wanted to love it, and I did. I mean, there was just no other way around it. It's a fairly traditional nine-hole routing in that you get you know, your two par threes and your two par fives and your five par fours, and it's only nine holes. But the hole designs themselves are insanely creative. You've got water, you got tricky greens, you got all the fun shots you could want. The 20,000 square foot fourth green, 20,000 square feet, Mitch.
Excuse me, did you say 20,000?
20,000 square feet on the fourth green is just called king on the scorecard. It's not even called, it doesn't even have a four. It's just, it goes 1, 2, 3, king, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the scorecard. It's ginormous. It has like basically three different sections of it. It's kind of this snaky type of thing, but for me, playing the Hickories, the pin placements resulted in a difference of like maybe 3, 4, even 5 club difference if the wind is blowing, you know, and it makes so many different options to be able to play that course. And that's the beauty of the course overall. There are so many different ways to play it. I went through, I played something like 60 holes in less than 24 hours. If you think it's not getting attention, let me tell you this. The morning I was out there, Mike Kaiser of Bandon Dunes fame had a bunch, basically a truckload of his friends, a busload of his buddies and him showed up to play it. You know, it's kind of indescribable if you haven't been there. It is so kind of quaint. The clubhouse is run out of this little tiny house, basically. There are these homes that have been there for a long time that are by the first tee. But then once you get past, you know, past the first green, you're just kind of out there on your own in this kind of wonderland. And what they did, I talked to Rob Collins about it. You and I, obviously, big fans of Tobacco Road and Mike Strantz. Rob told me he couldn't have done something like this if it hadn't been for seeing courses like Tobacco Road, kind of examples of how architects can take chances to create golf holes that are both wild and fun. And I think that sums it up. Wild and fun is exactly what Sweetens Cove is. You know, it is the new place for the true deep dive golf geek. It's their mecca, you know. You got to go down there. You got to check out Sweetens Cove. And like I said, I made a whirlwind trip, but I need to go back as well. I'm hoping you and I can go do it together. I'd spend 3 days there. You play it from all the different tees. You play it over and over again. You'll find yourself coming up. I still haven't figured out how to hit it close to the pin placements on the ninth green, which is this really cool par three that it closes on. And also has achieved some fame because if you're on the social media, there is a great video from Zach Blair's event this year where a guy putts a puts a ball up the slope, and as it's coming back down the slope, he walks up and pulls the flag for himself, and the ball goes in the hole. It's just, it's such a cool place, and I can't get over it. I think about it almost every day, different shots on that golf course.
Well, cool. We'll get there this year. I promise you. It's not even a question, because there's certain places that everybody I've talked to has been there, everybody I see on social media, it's a place I want to get to, so we'll get there. All right? Mark it down.
All right. I'm on it.
Sweetens Cove. All right. Let's move very far from Tennessee and talk about Scotland. You had an amazing trip to Scotland this year, you lucky dog. But there were a couple of courses there that you want to tell us about. I've played Western Gaels way before you were born, I'm pretty sure. On that trip that I told you about where I played Blair Gowrie, I played Western Gaels. Nobody knew about that golf course. Anybody I knew, nobody mentioned it, except a guy who, when we got there, said, you have to play Western Gaels. It's a British Open qualifier. Just go do it. And we did. And there was no social media back then, so people didn't talk about it. But tell us about Dunaverty and Western Gaels and your experience this year.
Well, Mitch, this is the rare case where I get to correct you on a pronunciation. That would be called Dunaverty.
No.
And yes, I kid you not.
Wow.
And I impressed many of the locals by figuring out that that's how you pronounce it.
How did you figure that out? How could you possibly figure that out?
When you're out there playing golf, 18 holes, walking by yourself, you just get things in your head. And I tried all different pronunciations of it. When I came back in, I said, this is pronounced Dunaverty, right? And he said, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I can't believe you got it. And I mentioned it a couple days later when I was at Macrahanish, playing the old course at Macrahanish. And she was like, oh, almost no Americans know how to say that. So I was quite proud of myself for knowing how to pronounce Dunaverty.
As you should be.
That being said, this podcast is going to go out, and then I'm going to probably find out that everybody was putting me on and I was saying it wrong the whole time. But we'll find out.
I so hope so. I so hope that it's wrong.
But let me tell you this. These two golf courses, and I mean, we're going to talk about it. We've said it before. We're going to have a lot of Scotland coverage over the next couple of months. But these two golf courses are just ones I wanted to single out for this specific podcast. Completely different experiences. But Dunaverty is another of these shorter golf courses that we're starting to really fall in love with. And it was perfect to talk about it in the vein with Sweetens Cove and Winter Park 9 and Goat Hill Park that we talk about and Mountain Shadows and all these things that are just a little different twist on what we know as traditional golf. Dunaverty is a par 66, and the total distance, total length is less than 5,000 yards. And so you look at that, and I think that's why people don't think to go there. You know, it's not Macrahanish Old or the new Macrahanish Dunes, both of which are great. Dunaverty is next to a caravan park, which, would be a trailer park here in the U.S., but it's also right on the ocean. And so it's got incredible, beautiful views. It's got so many glorious blind shots, and I'm not always a big fan of the blind shots, but because of the way it was designed and these rewarding kind of bowl-shaped greens complexes, it gets inside your head. You embrace it. I can try to drive these greens, and I'll get these cool bounces, and so it really gets special. It starts kind of on the blind par 3/4, where you hit over this rise on this par 3 to a completely blind green down into this bowl, and you come up over the rise, and it's like the ultimate reveal. I feel like I've hit a pretty good shot. Let's see how close it got to the pin. And you get up there, and you find out I'm either in or I'm not, and I'm on the green, or I'm going to have to be pitching. There's so much interest to almost every greens complex that it's fun on top of fun on top of fun. It just gets better and better. After you get past the fourth hole, to me, it just never stops the whole rest of the way.
Before you get to Western Gaels, don't you think it's interesting? We talk about Tobacco Road a lot, and the mindset that you mentioned is so key.
Yes.
I mean, blind shots, there aren't a ton of them at Tobacco Road, but blind shots and the attitude you have is what makes or breaks the experience. And it sounds like that's the experience you had in Scotland on this course. If you go out with that, I'm going to embrace this. I'm not going to say, oh, man. Because I hear people talk about how they hate blind shots, and I'm kind of going, okay, you don't get it.
Well, and I think we had this conversation when we talked about the 17th at Cabot Cliffs. I think with a blind shot, I think what kills holes with blind shots and what makes people hate them is if it's a blind shot hole where you can lose your golf ball.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about just generally speaking.
Right. But that's the beauty of this. And I think this type of golf design is it was almost impossible to lose your golf ball on these, even though you couldn't see the green in some mm-hmm. places from where you're hitting it. You know what you're doing. You know where you're supposed to hit it. And you get up there, you're either on the green or you're in the rough or whatever. I mean, I think I lost one golf ball on a terrible golf shot at the Naverty the whole way. And it was on probably the tightest of all the holes, but a beautifully framed final shot, approach shot in the middle of the round. And so, you know, you have to embrace that type of thing. You have to embrace a lot of things in Scotland because it's quirkier golf than what we find in the States. When you play the true links of Scotland as opposed to the more modern links in the US that get all the acclaim, you know, they're a lot quirkier. You know, we talk about that at Cruden Bay. We talk about it at all, you know, so many golf courses there. And even in like Makrahanish Dunes, I mentioned that David McClay Kidd built a new modern links there, but it has that quirky feel. And that's what makes it work here on the Kintyre Peninsula. And so to me, De Naverty, so much fun. There was another par four where you hit across the burn that's running out to the ocean to kind of this sideways rectangle green. It was just such a fun approach. I hit three or four balls across it to just try to see what you could do off the banks and the slopes. And in seeing it, it made me realize I played all those courses on the peninsula. And, you know, David McClay Kidd spent a lot of time in his youth on the Kintyre Peninsula. And I could see from playing Makrahanish Old and playing De Naverty how he began to form his design philosophy, because many of the shots that you see at De Naverty are shots that I see on his modern designs. And I just thought that was so, so cool. And it's so fun. And I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about De Naverty when I went on this trip. It was added to the itinerary for me. And it was the perfect way to start this trip or any trip to Scotland. And I can't wait to get back to the Kintyre Peninsula to play it again along with the other ones.
Well, let's talk about Western Gaels for a second. As I said, I had gotten to play it. It stayed with me for 30 years. Now, I haven't been back. I haven't been able to play it, but most people don't know that name. But it's starting to gain the kind of recognition that it deserves, especially as one of the greatest examples of links courses that you can find in Scotland. And you got a chance to play Western Gaels.
Yeah, and I played it on an amazing morning. It was absolutely beautiful. I was the first one out. I went out before a club competition. There was nobody on the golf course. And what I love about it, it's the opposite. It's not quirky like De Naverty. It's more akin to what we would consider a modern links in terms of kind of the way it is designed, with these big holes that are wispy grass framed. But where it is part of the genius. And you see so much of this in the Ayrshire area that, you know, that these golf courses all link together running up that coast. And Western Gaels is tucked between the railroad and the sea. And you've got basically half the holes run along the sea and half the holes run along the railroad. And it makes for this great dichotomy of holes in that they're different, but the golf course never feels like a tale of two nines. It feels like one beautifully framed consistent golf experience throughout. Now you got to be on your game because especially if the wind is blowing off the ocean, you know, to hit the fairways, but the fairways are pretty generous, more generous than you would expect. And I think that's part of it. But these holes that are tucked into the grasses and kind of built into the mounds, you kind of, you're on this kind of roller coaster as you go over, you know, play the oceanside holes. And so many of the greens are fun. They've got these, you know, cool little hidden mounds and hollows and all the things you would expect from Scotland golf. And then you've got so much history. You know, you think about it when you're out there, guys like Harry Vardon and Gene Sarazen playing these fairways and greens before you. It just makes a morning at Western Gales absolutely perfect. It was probably my biggest surprise of the trip, and that's why it makes this list.
I know it's wonderful. I'm hoping people who are listening who might not have had that on their radar make Western Gales a stop if they go to Scotland. Let's move back to the States and a place I got to play this year, which I had heard about. If you live in Myrtle Beach, if you live in South Carolina, if you're in this part of the country, there are a couple of courses in the Augusta area that you hear about all the time. A lot of people haven't been lucky enough to play them. Palmetto Golf Club is one. And I got a chance to play that thanks to my good friend John Patrick of the Augusta Golf Show. He and his friend Michael, who's a member, got me out to Palmetto. But then this year, again with John Patrick and the fantastic golf writer Scott Michaud, who we had on an earlier podcast, Darren, obviously you know who he is. Scott's one of the really, really great golf writers that we have in the game and lives in the Augusta area. We had a chance, the three of us, to go and play Aiken Golf Club. And I'd heard about it, as I said. And when I got to play it, it's one of those places that you go, okay, I've heard about it. I'm really looking forward to playing it. And then you play it and you go, okay, this blew my mind. This place just blows my mind. 1912, it was first built. They have an unbelievable history over the last 100 years and more. A lot of changes along the way, but absolutely one of the coolest places that you'll ever play. It began as an 11-hole course. It was finished in 1915. A guy named John Inglis, who was a disciple of Donald Ross and who had spent time with him, he was the club pro at Aiken from 1915 till 39. So he did the work to bring it up to 18 holes. Then they sold it. It was a family business and remains a family enterprise. And the McNairs right now are still involved in it, these guys. And once you start reading about what they've put into Aiken, you understand why it's so great. Bill Corr had some input. He encouraged James McNair Jr., who restored the course to its original design in 1997. And it is an absolute gem. I mean, this is one of those places you put your bag on, you walk. It's only 5,800 yards from the tips. Do you hear what I said, Darren?
5,800 yards.
5,800 yards.
That's becoming the theme for us.
From the tips.
Yeah.
Not from up there, from the tips. And if people think that means there's no challenge, you just take out a driver and bomb it, think again. Because these holes have everything you want. They've got history. They have challenge. The greens are unbelievable. The environment is incredible. The walk is great. Aiken is a beautiful spot, you know, half an hour from Augusta. This, as I said, this place blew my mind. It really got under my skin once I played it. And the prices are a joke. If you get in there, if you play with a member, it's really nuts how cheap it is. And you can go by yourself and you can get on certain days of the week and it's still incredibly cheap. So I recommend Aiken Golf Club to anybody who's in the area. If you're going to be in the Augusta area for the Masters or during Masters time, spend a few extra days and go walk around Aiken Golf Club a couple times.
I love these places where we hear about families that are committed to building a true experience, whether that is restoring an older experience or creating something completely new. But these family efforts out there, and the next place on our list, Purcell Farms, Farm Links is the golf course at Purcell Farms, you know, is that exact same way. It took me a while to get to this Alabama gym, but so worth it for so many reasons. It's kind of a scientific lab for showcasing the family's fertilizer business and turf grass maintenance. The course features different types of grasses throughout. The conditions are immaculate. In fact, it reminds me of the now defunct Stevenson Ranch that I love so much out here in California, which was owned by a maintenance company, essentially. And thus, the conditions were just always pristine. And that's what you get at Purcell Farms with the Farm Links course. But purely as a golf course, it's great fun. It was designed by Hurston Fry, who, you know, have all kinds of fame now, especially with Erin Hills. Well-designed holes through the farm's flatlands, but the par threes might be three of the best par threes you'll find anywhere on any golf course together. They are these roller coaster extreme drop shot par threes that are just oh so memorable. And now that this, quote, little family fertilizer company has evolved into a full-blown golf resort, you know, they've got excellent F&B. They've got a new hotel to go with the cabins and cottages. They've even got shooting clays, other activities. Now, Farm Links has really just become a destination all its own. And we keep teasing it. They were a sponsor for a while, and we've mentioned Farm Links a lot. But we'll have more on Alabama coming in 2019. We're going to talk about an entire trip that I made down there and kind of winding my way through so many great experiences. But Farm Links is really at the top of the list.
We've talked about Alabama a lot, I've noticed.
Yeah, probably more than most. It deserves to
get
more.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Yeah, it deserves more love than it gets, I think. And, you know, I'm happy to say that. I hadn't gone to Alabama. It took me a long time to get there. But when I did, I found so much to love about it. And, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting state. It's got unique history. It's got good golf. You know, the professional golfers end up there. It hosted the U.S. Women's Open last year. So it's a cool place. And I don't think enough people think about, oh, I'm going to put Alabama on my golf vacation list, but they definitely should.
All right. Here's another place people might not think about, Hobbs, New Mexico, as far as golf. But you got to go to Rockwind Community Links, and it sounds like it's an awesome spot.
I'll give you a map, Mitch, and I'll give you 10 chances to find Hobbs, New Mexico on that map. And I'll put the odds at even money that you can't do it.
All right. Well, tell me why I should go.
Yeah, it's such a cool, you know, the town's not very big. I think it's 40, 50,000 or something like that. But it's a growing oil town that has seen amazing growth in recent years. And that means the city needed a quality golf course. And so there was a golf course there, and they realized they need to do something different. So Andy Staples came in, who we mentioned in previous podcasts. Andy had a hand in Sand Hollow as well, out in Utah. He's building a lot of interesting stuff. And he came in and renovated the existing municipal course, and the results are absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is community golf. Once again, we keep talking about how great community golf is and the rise of community golf across the country. This is community golf at its best, right down to the $30 non-resident rate. $30.
How cool is that?
So you and I show up there, Mitch, we can go play. We can go walk that golf course for $30. It's incredibly walkable. And, you know, the price, I can't get over it, because most places, if you put this level of golf course with this much interesting golf on it someplace else, you'd be paying $60, $70, $80 at least, you know, in other parts of the country. So it's definitely worth the price of admission. It might be one of the best values you'll find anywhere in the country.
Well, and it sounds like he did, like you said, an amazing job, because the land, you told me about this place, it didn't sound like the land was that big of a deal, but what he did with the land was the accomplishment.
Exactly. It's a fairly mundane, rather flat piece of land, rather pedestrian piece of land, I guess. He found a way to use really ultra creative greens, subtle fairway movement to make nearly every shot interesting. It's got a Muirfield-esque routing where, you know, the 1-9 goes on the outside one direction, and then it comes back the other direction on the interior for the other 9. It's got things you won't see anywhere else on any other golf course in the country, including these, what I call bomb bunkers that you find, these large grass depressions that are left over from when the site was once upon a time used for practice bombing runs at a nearby Air Force base. So, you know, you're going down the fairway and you've got these kind of, just kind of deep depressions that you might hit it in and have to play out of. It reminded me a little bit of Mucklemouth Meg. Mm-hmm. You know who Mucklemouth Meg is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Highlands Links.
Up at Highlands Links on Nova Scotia's Cape Breton Island, Mucklemouth Meg has these kind of mounds, I guess, throughout the fairway. And that's the name of one of the holes. I don't remember which hole it is exactly. But this is kind of the exact opposite of the Mucklemouth Meg, in that these depressions just make for another hazard, but not really a hazard. You're not going to lose your golf ball, and it's not like having to hit out of a bunker, but it's enough to add another level of interest and challenge to your shots from the bunkers. So, you know, it's a cool design. The facilities are excellent as well. They've got a full golf shop. They've got a wonderful outdoor shaded deck area. They've got a little fun 9-hole golf course. And, you know, like I said, as we're holding up these other places around the country as the future of community golf, Rockwind deserves to be, you know, deserves its own place in the same breath with Winter Park 9 and Goat Hill Park and all these others that truly get it when it comes to taking the game to new levels for all kinds of players. When you play this golf course, you can see exactly what you were talking about with Winter Park 9. It's incredibly challenging for the guy who wants to play it from the back and go out and, you know, and really give it his all. But just people who are learning the game, they have a robust youth program that they're catering to. You know, it just really, they get it in terms of what they're trying to do. And here's the best testament, Mitch. I remember walking off the 18th, which has a tree cleverly placed in the fairway protecting the green approach. It requires all kinds of shot making and decision making. You got to decide which way to go around the tree, or if you got to lay up far enough back to go over the tree. Just a very, very cool kind of twist on the 18th hole. And I walked off of that green and I thought, wow, I have made a mistake. I've only planned to spend one morning here playing Rockwind Community Links, because this packed itinerary, I was on my way north, you know, for the rest of this crazy trip that my wife and I did in the summer. Next time I'm going back, I'm going to take some friends. We're going to play this course multiple times, stay at the nearby casino, which we'll talk about when we do a full episode on this. And I just want to play it over and over again and see there's so much more to the golf course that you just don't experience in one single round. And you just need to play it again and again and again, like so many of the courses that we love. And I'm hoping we're going to have Andy Staples on the pod as well very soon to talk about not only this, but also Sand Hollow. It should be a really good podcast.
All right. We're going to go to another spot now. We're talking about a spot that a lot of people don't think about either when they're traveling around the country, but a spot that you love. I have yet to get there, but hopefully that'll happen soon too, and that's North Dakota. I am indeed a fan of Jim Eng, and I know you are too, and with Hawktree, that kind of added another chapter to your Jim Eng list.
Yeah, I'm really just starting to check off Jim Eng courses from my bucket list. I've got to see a handful of them, but this is one of those, you know, he's one of those golf architects that we prefer to call designers, because he's one of the group of guys who really bring an extreme artistry to golf design, bring something to the game that challenges you visually in addition to challenging your shot making. I'd heard a lot about Hawktree. I didn't know what to expect because North Dakota does not seem to be a hotbed of golf. it's kind of a cool place to travel to, and we'll talk more about that on a future podcast. There's a lot of cool national parks and other things, but it turns out you go to Hawktree, you should expect a lot, because first of all centers around a high point clubhouse, which reminded me, not quite as extremely, but reminded me of Bulls Bay, which you and I also played this mm-hmm. year. And you know, it spends all 18 holes basically working its way up and down and through the foothills, back up to the clubhouse, down into the valleys below. You get all types of shots. You can pretty much see the entire course from the clubhouse, which is a great hang spot. And the course is both distinctive and soothing all at once. It's a tranquil walk as you're going through, but it's also punctuated by black sand bunkers, so it has this really cool drama to it. And you can hit all the shots, Mitch, which is what we're talking about in great golf architecture. You know, you get uphill shots, you get downhill shots, you got dramatic shots over water, you got short par fours high atop plateaus, you got dog legs. I mean, you name it, you can find it out there. And I'd venture to say very few courses in America require the variety of shots that Ng has at Hawktree. And because of that, if you play it more than once, no two rounds out there will ever feel the same. And so it's a very cool place. I'm glad I made the time to stop there on my way through North Dakota. Need to get back up there. There's other golf courses that we need to play, including some other Jim Ingmark there in North Dakota that we need to take a look at.
Yeah, and we need to get back to Reynolds.
Yeah.
Because though we kind of glanced at the Jim Ng course at Reynolds Plantation, we didn't get to play it when we were there.
Yeah, so unfortunately.
I think that's something.
Unfortunately, we got rained out that day.
I know, but so that's one of those where you go, okay, it's worth going back. Amidst all the other great things about Reynolds that we love also. But Hawktree sounds fabulous.
Yes.
I love the black. The only other place I've seen black sand is in Hawaii on the golf course. That's the only other time I've ever heard it. It's interesting that it would be up in North Dakota.
There's a golf course up in Montana, Old Works, a Jack Nicklaus golf course that also uses like black slag or something like that for their bunkers. And it's very cool. It's very, like I said, it's very distinctive. It gives a golf course a whole different feel to it when you're playing it. And, you know, if you're a fan of Jim Ng's work, as we are, you'll be happy to hear we're working hard to try to get him on a podcast here in 2019 as well. One of the many golf course designers that we're hoping to have on as we look forward into this new year.
And we are indeed in a new year, so that's going to be a good thing. Let me now turn to Michigan. We'll go from Jim Ng's work at Hawktree in North Dakota. We'll move a little east and go up to Upper Michigan. And I did get a chance to go to Boyne Resorts. And the whole Boyne group of golf courses is pretty amazing. They have such a difference of golf courses. There are 10 courses at their three resorts. Obviously, I didn't get to play all of them when I was there, but this is going to be another trip that I'm going back, and hopefully soon, because I really loved it. The whole Boyne experience kind of blew me away. We've talked about it on earlier podcasts. But for those of you who don't know, may not have heard those, Boyne Golf, the guy who founded him was a guy named Everett Kircher, and he was an outdoorsman. And the word visionary can't be applied enough to this guy. He bought the land that became Boyne Mountain for $1 and created this ski resort. And he was the kind of guy who said, I love my employees, and the ski resort had become big. He'd been there for about 20 years, and he said, I want to give them something to do in the off season. And so he went out, and a friend of his said, why don't you build a golf course? So he took a tractor, like a family tractor, and he carved out a 9-hole par 3 course on the mountain under the ski lift at the mountain. And it's still there, and you can play it. It's lit. You can play it at night. It's unbelievable. But that was the first thing he did. Then he said, you know, this isn't bad. And somebody said, well, if you're going to build a golf course, you should get the preeminent designer, which at the time in 1966 was Robert Trent Jones Sr. So he did. He didn't really know about it, but he took their word for it, and he somehow got Robert Trent Jones Sr. out there. At the Boyne Highlands, which is the first place that we went, they have four golf courses. I'll just mention three because we're not going to get into every one here. The Heather, which was the first course at the Highlands, which was the Robert Trent Jones Sr. course in 66. Fantastic. Gorgeous. I mean, really beautiful. The Upper Michigan, especially during the spring and the fall and the summer, is beyond beautiful. So you know what that's like. The second Highlands course is called the Moore course, which I did not get a chance to play. Supposed to be great. And the Hills course, the Arthur Hills course there, which is truly amazing. It's got a huge canvas, and the elevation changes are great. Just those three courses together would be enough. But then they had something that really, and people who know the podcast, you and I know our love of Hickory Golf and our love of classic golf courses. And this story to me is the one that grabbed me. The Donald Ross Memorial Course at Boyne Highlands. I got to play it with our good friend Kevin Frisch, who set up this great media trip that I was able to go on. And Kevin's one of our favorite people and really is Mr. Michigan Golf. He knows everything about it. He's a great player himself, and he had a set of hickories at his house. And he said to me, if you're coming up, why don't we take the hickories out and we'll go play the Ross course? And I said, great. So I went ahead and the two of us played hickories. The Donald Ross Memorial Course was an amazing idea. And to give you an idea, a really brief idea of what this guy Kershaw was about, he and some of the people involved in the building of the Boyne Resort Golf Group spent a number of years, once they decided on this Donald Ross Memorial Course, traveling the country to Donald Ross courses. They didn't just say, we're going to go ahead and build a Ross Memorial Course. They went to all the golf courses. And they picked 18 designs from those courses, came back to Upper Michigan, and built this memorial course. And the only thing I can say is what they did was, I wouldn't call them replica holes. They're literally as close to the originals as you can get being in Upper Michigan. So you've got Oakland Hills represented, Seminole, Pinehurst number 2, Oak Hill. And what they did was they put all of them together based on the land available. And they took the yardages of the holes and the elevation changes from the tees to the greens, and they made them as close to identical to the original holes as they could. So when you go out and play this golf course, you not only get a sense of the history, but you really get a feel for what those places are like, which was mind-boggling to me, as I said. And
it sounds like such an amazing idea.
And when you actually go and see the canvas that this golf course is on, and you read about each hole, and you can dig as deep as you want. If you're a history guy like me, I couldn't get enough of it, obviously. But for people who just, the thing that really blew me away was, if you don't care at all about Donald Ross and you don't care at all about the history of the game, you can go out and play the Ross Memorial Course and be blown away by it. That's how great a golf course this is. So it has all those together. I can't say enough about it. They also have all these other courses that you should check out. If you go to boynegolf.com, you can find them. I got a chance to, and these are really on my list too, but we stayed at the Inn at Bay Harbor. I mentioned it on the place to stay. There's the Bay Harbor Golf Club right near Petoskey, down the road from the Highlands. There's 3 9-hole Arthur Hills tracks there that are just fantastic and really a treat to play. And I want to mention too, at Boyne Highlands, they have the Boyne Golf Academy. That was the first thing I did when I got there. They have a GEARS system. You know what GEARS stands for, Darren? Here's your extra point bonus.
Golf Engineering Analysis Research System is my guess.
Stop reading my notes. yeah, that's right. Golf Engineering Analysis Research System. And it's a really fantastic way to go in and get yourself tested. And they do club measurements and all kinds of things. So I experienced that. But the whole Boyne group and the golf courses are fantastic. So I was thrilled to be able to play the courses and to get to the Ross Memorial. That was one of the 9 great new places to play that I found.
Mitch, one of the other things I wanted to mention, you talked about Bay Harbor, is the links at Bay Harbor, that 9 holes of that 27-hole facility. There is a stretch out there that is as scenic as anything you will find in the U.S., including coastal, lakefront, you name it. Those few holes on the links at Bay Harbor are just, they're outstanding. They're so beautiful.
Yeah. And you're right there on Lake Michigan, and the way Arthur Hills did it. I've been reading a lot on social media about people who are really kind of getting back into Arthur Hills courses. We have one here in Myrtle Beach out of Myrtlewood called the Pine Hills Course. And it's always been a favorite of people who come to Myrtle Beach. But I played these courses and the work that between the hills at Boyne Highlands and the 3 courses. I agree with you. The Lynx course of the 3 is the most stunning. And it's as close, when a lot of places say Lynx and you go, yeah, okay, great. And it's not true Lynx land because we're not in Scotland or Ireland. But the views and the way the course plays and the way he designed it is just really amazing. And I agree with you. The views are spectacular.
Yep.
Fantastic. All right, let's move on. We had done an episode earlier, just recently, as a matter of fact, way back in 2018, episode 119 with our good friend, blogger Pete Flanagan, you know him as Regripped, about Rams Hill. And I wasn't familiar with it until I heard you and Pete talk about it. And again, just like a lot of these courses, it's a place I cannot wait to get to.
Oh, yeah. Pete and I gushed about this Tom Fazio-designed desert oasis down near California's Salton Sea. The key to Rams Hill is the width. The design creates fun angles, the ability to play the game in a variety of ways. And especially this time of year, Mitch, when most of the country is starting to see snow out the window, Rams Hill is just waiting for golfers to make the trip from LA or San Diego or Palm Springs, wherever you happen to be calling your vacation home for the winter time. You can get over to Rams Hill and play it. We're not going to talk about it a whole lot here because, as you said, that episode, we talked about it quite a bit. So go back, listen to episode 119 if you want to hear more about Rams Hill. But just know that it is definitely one of the best places we played for the first time in 2018.
All right, let's move on now to another place that I really want to get to. And this is worth spending some time on. We have yet to really devote a full podcast to this. But Sylvie's Valley Ranch, we had heard about it as it was coming up. I have met and spent time with Dan Hixon, the architect. We both loved Bend and Crossings, another one of his great courses. But the fact that you got to experience Sylvie's Valley sometimes, and it doesn't happen often, but I'm jealous of you. And this was one of them.
Well, you know, we've talked on the podcast a lot about The Loop, and that's Tom Doak's reversible masterpiece out at Forest Dunes in Michigan. But what Hixon has done here out in eastern Oregon at what is called the Retreat Links and Spa at Sylvie's Valley Ranch, it's no less remarkable. It's really, really cool. It is not the same as The Loop is in that it's not a true reversible. It's 27 greens that Dan found out there on this property. And then he engineered it to create a reversible routing that plays as two separate 18-hole tracks, goes a different direction each day. One of them is called the Hankins. The other one is called the Craddock. All the courses on the property, there are four actually, are named after local historic figures. And if you visit, you have to stay long enough to play it both ways, because just to see how he kind of pieced together this intricate jigsaw through this very dramatic terrain out in eastern Oregon is really something. It's beautiful. It's tree-lined. You've got all kinds of wildlife out there. It's so cool. And anytime I look at these kinds of projects, I just think, I don't have the brain capacity to even comprehend how you build something like this, where it's hard enough to figure out how to have a fairway and a green where you come in at one angle. But these places where now you're using the green for two separate purposes, playing it from different directions in, it's just really fascinating. And I loved it out there.
Well, again, we had heard most of the press about this place, about Sylvie's Valley, was around something called McVeigh's Gauntlet.
Yes.
And that's the Goat Caddies, and our friend Akbar and the team at Seamus Golf created the bags that they have there that the goats carry around that are your caddies, which is completely mind-boggling. It makes me want to go just for the goats. I don't care if I hit a golf shot.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I actually didn't use a goat caddy on McVeigh's Gauntlet, but I watched other people do it. And I was just out there playing by myself. But you're right. It's best known on social media for those. There's a lot of good video out there. But McVeigh's Gauntlet is one of the more crazier things I've ever seen at a golf resort, I guess. and you have to be a person who embraces the spirit of extreme golf, like we talk about all the time. And really what I am now calling McVeigh's Gauntlet, I call it mountaineering golf, because literally seven of the downright toughest holes you'll ever find, hopping from hilltop green to hilltop green. You have to walk down through these like gorges and back up to other hills. I mean, it's an experience. And after seven holes, you feel like you've done something going all the way up this thing and all the way back down. There's a hole up on top called the beer that has the beer tree. It like literally has a sign on it called the beer tree. There's beer up there for you to grab. I think I've said in the past, I wish they had a little, they put some sodas or something in there for the non-drinkers, or like in my case, I was playing like at 8 a.m. or something like that. So it was a little too early to be drinking.
So you'd want the single malt tree.
Exactly.
Or the fireball tree.
I take a fireball tree. That would be good. But the hole that's right there at the beer tree is just like this little, it's like a par two, basically, or a par 1.5 or something like that. It's almost, the fairway is almost as narrow as you would see like at a goofy golf, you know, a miniature golf course.
Right.
It's very narrow. It falls off on both sides. It's got a little green up there that you chip it up to. All the holes are fun. It's just something. And they have a sign at the beginning of it, you know, where you look at it, you just say, it tells you, you know, here are the ways to keep score while you're playing McVay's Gauntlet. Try to keep track of how many golf balls you lose. Keep track of how many total strokes you take. Try to play it as real golf so you can get a real sense of how many strokes it actually took you. and just go have fun. And that's what it's all about. It's meant to beat the hell out of you. And it does with everything.
Did this guy, you said it was a lot of this stuff is about historical figures. Did he survive exploring this place or did he die? Is he one of the guys that died at McVay's Gauntlet?
I don't recall the history of McVay himself, but I'm sure there's plenty out there that people can look at. But it's just, it's fun and different. And like I said, it's unlike anything I've ever seen at any golf course or any resort that we've ever been to. And it makes this experience even more because you can play one of the courses, you know, and then you can play McVay's Gauntlet. If you went out there with a bunch of friends, you know, I can only think if you had 8 or 12 guys and you were doing this and maybe if you did it and played it as, you know, here, everybody gets one golf ball and you're done once you lose that golf ball, you would just have the most extreme competition you've ever had out there. It would be so much fun.
Yeah, but it could be one swing and then you're just hiking.
That's entirely possible because the first hole is literally up the side of a mountain to a plateau green and you're just carrying scrub brush the entire way.
Oh, great. Cool.
But you can find your ball a lot of times. I found a lot of balls that I hit in the scrub brush. I found it in there. The problem is, you know, your second shot or your next shot out of it, you know, might go somewhere else and you have to go look in the scrub brush some more. So it's pretty fun. And the whole thing is brilliantly put together. All of Sylvie's Valley Ranch is.
Well, it sounds like it's the kind of place where you don't go just for a day. No. You know, you've got all this golf there. We're going to do a full episode this year detailing all the stuff you could do at Sylvie's Valley. But for now, you should really start planning a trip. It's remote. It's out there. But it's the kind of place, as a lot of Oregon golf is, we know what Bandon's like. And if you think it's not worth it to get there and stay for 4, 5, 6, 7 days, you're crazy. And according to you, they have a brand new spa. And we know how you feel about spas.
Well, yeah, Sylvie's Valley Ranch is a full working ranch. You know, you can take a tour, see some of the impressive things they're doing, especially some environmental protection efforts out in that area. But as a retreat experience, it's pretty much unparalleled. Like you said, we're going to talk more about it, but it's got great cabins. It's out of the way, so you've got to be intentional about getting out there. But if you're going to do that, you've got to stay 3 or 4 days. And like I said, or like you just mentioned, they just opened a brand new spa facility that is really great as well. And so there's just so much to do out there. You can have an Old West experience and have a ton of cool, varied golf experiences all at the same time. And that's what makes it really, really a special place. I was blown away. I'd heard a lot about it, but I didn't expect the scope of what was offered to be as vast as it was when I got there. And they're also selling real estate out there. So if you want to go live in Eastern Oregon, I can think of a lot worse places to go. I mean, this place is really, really great.
Well, it sounds like I'd play McVay's Gauntlet and then spend 3 days at the spa. I'm just saying. All right. We have a final entry into the best new 9 courses that we played, give or take.
9 in quotes.
Yeah. And this one, again, I have not been there. I will get there, hopefully this year. But this place deserves, I think, the final kind of spot because, in a way, we've almost been building up to Mammoth Dunes. That's at least the way I feel. I know that's probably the way you feel too.
You know, we've talked about David McClay Kidd a little bit already in this podcast, and we've mentioned everything that Sand Valley is doing, you know, a number of times, and way back in episodes 11, 12, and 13, Mitch.
What was that, like 1893,
I think. It seems like it was forever ago. I think it was back in 2016. We welcomed Michael Kaiser Jr. on to Talking Golf Getaways to discuss, at that time, the rocketing fame of Sand Valley Golf Resort, and that was when it just had one golf course.
Right.
It was just in its infancy. The Coeur Crenshaw course had opened. Other projects were in the work. Coeur Crenshaw was building the new 17-hole sandbox short course. The much-awaited Mammoth Dunes, designed by David McClay Kidd, was being routed at the time. It's through even more dramatic terrain on the property. And now, some 3 years later, both of those are done. Mammoth Dunes is open. They even have plans now that Tom Doak's going to build the next course. But Sand Valley just keeps raising the bar, finding itself on this trajectory to possibly become the best premium golf experience in the U.S., maybe North America. They never let up. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. And we're going to try to have Michael Kaiser on again for a full update episode about this. But the question was going there, is Mammoth Dunes going to live up to the hype? Because, you know, David has gotten a lot of good press from what he did at Gamble Sands. It's one of my favorite places to play. And the answer is absolutely. It just absolutely lived up to the hype and makes this resort just even so much better.
And you did it in a way, and I love this idea. And again, we talk to people about going and not just, sometimes you only have one shot and you can just go and play and then you got to get out. But if you have a chance to really hang around someplace, especially a new course, and play it a few times and really start to get a feel for the differences and the different ways to play it and what somebody's done, like David McClay Kidd, when they designed it, you did it a perfect way. I mean, during your trip this summer.
Yeah, exactly. I went back, and because we had played Sand Valley before, I'd been there a couple of times. So I played Mammoth three times in just 2 days. And once again, it illustrates why McClay Kidd is the leader of Golf Design's new, what we call the fun movement. Mammoth is far from easy. And I think that's what sometimes people hear about these big, wide courses that Kidd builds and that you can play aggressively. And they're like, oh, it must be a pushover. It's far from that. There are blind shots and big greens, plenty of ways to get yourself into trouble if you're hitting the ball offline. But it's also a track where you can attack as much as you feel like you want to. Kidd wants you to shoot your best score on his golf courses. He's very vocal about that. But he also realizes you can go down in flames trying if you want to be, if you're over aggressive. So one of the quotes I love of his is just, "Confident golf is fun golf." And so, you know, he says that, and when you walk through Mammoth Dunes, it gives you plenty of opportunities to say, yeah, I can pull this shot off. Watch this. And then maybe you do, maybe you don't. In one of those three rounds, I played with three other guys, and I saw everything from an ace to an 11 carded that day. That's variety. And that's what makes
it great.
How
cool is that?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yep. It's outstanding. And, you know, what's better is what's even more about the whole Sand Valley experience is these are three completely different golf experiences. That's what makes it special. Mammoth and Sand Valley are the perfect 1-2 punch. And you can debate which one is number one and which one is number two for you, because I know people who like the Sand Valley course more. I know people who like the Mammoth Dunes course more. For me, the great thing about it is neither one of them are bad. Nobody's going to say, well, this is the good one, this is the bad one. It's just like one might be one and the next one 1A. And you get to choose which one. And then the sandbox is a whole nother completely different thing that Coeur Crenshaw built. It's almost a pitch and putt, but a little bit more than that. But it still feels like, because it's 17 holes, it feels like a full round of golf, even though it's designed to just be played with a handful of golf clubs. And, you know, Mammoth Dunes has helped Sand Valley become, you know, for lack of a better pun, a mammoth success. And I just can't wait to see what both Sand Valley does next and really what David McClay Kidd does next, because I keep seeing everything new that he does, I feel like, we just want to go play and we want to see if he can top it with the next place he goes.
All great. And just so you know, there is no word in the English language that is nother.
Nother? Did I say nother?
Nother. You say that all the time.
A whole nother?
Yeah, whole nother. But for you, it works somehow. I know what it means. So, all right. It's important to note that we just focused on places everyone can play, but you saw a lot of cool private courses too.
Oh, yeah. I played all kinds of great private places. Well, you and I obviously played Bulls Bay. That was one of two Mike Schrantz courses that we got to see.
Right. But for me, that was not a new play.
No, but it was for me. Yeah. And
I don't care about you.
I played Silver Creek Valley as well, another Schrantz redesign out here in California. Rolling Hills Country Club, speaking of Dave McClay Kidd, he built in Southern California, a major redesign, wonderful, I mean, just complete reconstruction, basically, of a golf course. I played the Devil's Paintbrush, which we're going to talk more about with Lauren Rubenstein, your good friend, on an upcoming podcast. We got to go to Big One Island. And I went to the Abaco Club, which we mentioned back in the food episode about all about Bahamian lobster. Most of those we're going to leave for another podcast, but I just wanted to make sure that I didn't want anybody to feel left out, Mitch, that this 9 or 9 plus, as we've called it now, was basically focused on places that everyone can play, which is kind of what we do for the most part, even though we do have the privilege to play the occasional private club at times.
Yeah, and I think that's a big deal. Is as we get started here in 2019, I know why. We've just on this podcast, there's a bunch of places that I'm going, okay, I'm going to get there this year. That's what I want this year to be about. You and I had talked about it, you know, as you get older, as your life kind of keeps going on, and you go, okay, what's important to me? And you and I are lucky enough to get to visit some amazing places, but I want to be more proactive about getting to some of these places that are a little tougher to get to, but worth every minute that you spend there. So I think between the two of us, we both feel like if we can give some people out there a clue as to what they want to go about, you know, getting to in 2019, then we'll have done our job. So I hope whoever's listening has enjoyed the three podcasts to wrap up 2018, and hopefully 2019 will get off to a blazing start wherever you are. Certainly, if you're in a warm spot, go play golf.
Yeah, no doubt.
For God's sake. And if you're not, then just think about these places and start making some plans. That's the only thing. There are more than 9, obviously, places that hopefully are on your radar now to get on your golf travel itinerary and get those juices flowing for 2019. We're going to have, as we said, full podcasts on many of these courses, destinations in the coming year. And as always, you should know by now, we're available on social media 24/7.
That's right. Hit us up with all your golf travel questions on the Twitter, on the Instagram. We are going to have so much content and so many guests on in 2019. We're just going to be winning. You're going to be tired of how much winning we do in 2019.
All right. Can you find another way to say that?
We're going to have so many guests on the podcast in 2019.
And we're going to have so much fun.
So much fun that your head will explode from how much fun we have.
Good. All right. We'll be hearing those explosions. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes if you'd be so kind. Also, support our efforts. Visit and explore the website at golfnewsnet.com and our upcoming and incredibly exciting sister site that we'll be telling you about very shortly.
When this airs...
Yes.
That announcement should be only days, literally days away from when
days
this
away.
Podcast hosts.
And that site is going to be called...
Something.
Something. And it involves golf. All right.
It might have something to do with golf, and it might have something to do with trips. And it might have something to do with being an expert.
It's right. It's exactly right. And it might have something to do with the alphabet. How's that for a tease? Okay. Glad you've been with us. This has really been a gas. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for a great 2018, my friend. And here's to 2019. I can't wait.
Go run down your dream.